You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room with Matt Doyle, Bim Bear, back for another full show. How do you feel seeing your name on the lineup card walking in today?
It was 2 weeks off, but I felt like I proved myself over these last 2 weeks in training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I deserve this shot.
He's been working on voice projection.
Yeah.
Right.
On my direction. You know, I just want to get him reps so when he has the real thing, it just comes natural to him.
So Goss is in danger of losing his spot.
I think we should publicly get me on the dais. I will definitely say that David Goss should definitely, while he's in Russia, be wary of his tea consumption. Make sure that voice, those pipes, stay nice and golden, because you just never know.
He does have golden pipes when the young
buck gets an opportunity.
Golden pipes.
Yes.
I don't think I've heard David Goss and golden pipes.
Yours are like rusty pipes.
Mm-hmm. That's very mean.
I'm just kidding. So by the way, usually Doyle is on his computer half the time, and we still get just great stuff from him. This time, Portugal and Iran are playing, and there's a possibility that Cristiano Ronaldo could be out of the World Cup. And because I'm a nice guy, I left the TV on.
So we're watching TV.
Watch it as well.
And watching TV while podcasting.
And I'm tweeting snarkily, and I'm doing ETR.
Yeah. So
that's what Bobby was talking about with the multitasking that you do.
Right. I mean, Gen X, we can do it. Millennials, you guys are just a little bit lazy, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what
I'll walk right out of here
say.
Right now. I'll walk out of here now. Look, we got a big show coming for you. MLS is back. It is back. Week 17, top to bottom.
Ben,
that's
fetch
coming your
me
way.
Some avocado toast.
There's no PAs in here. Paul Tenorio, he'll join us in the second segment. Orlando City are looking for a head coach, and Paul is plugged in on that one. So he'll let us know who the favorites are, what we should expect, what that coach should expect once he hits the locker room. The All-Star Fan 11 presented by Target has been revealed. And Atlanta United fans stuffed the ballot box. 6 5 stripes on this 11.
It's so only six?
Only six.
Yeah,
I'm shocked that
they didn't get all eight.
Who missed that? Was it Gressel?
Gressel and Perez.
Gonzalez Perez.
Yeah.
Don't appreciate the back line in Atlanta.
I mean, not that he
Somebody's
deserved
educate
it. Did
them.
He, right? No?
I don't know. We'll talk about that in the second segment as well.
Sorry.
MLS versus the world in the mailbag. We have a lot of people coming up with interesting theoreticals about, well, what if MLS entered the competition? What if we had regional competitions by league, basically all-star teams? We'll get to that in the mailbag very quickly. I just want to have a reminder before we get into the weekend here. It is 15 days until the summer transfer windows opens. July 10th, my birthday. That's how you can remember it at home. Just quick shorthand for you. And if you'd like to send me T-shirts to the office here, I'll send you T-shirts back.
Time to throw some tennis balls, huh?
Yeah, for sure, man. Oh, that's a little too inside. That's a little too inside. We can't tell that story on the air. Some news from that, by the way. Kakuta Mane just signed with FC St. Gallen in the Swiss Super League.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I pronounce it.
I think. I don't think it's – because it's not – it's
went
not
with
a romance.
Spanish. I went
yeah,
Spanish
it's not a romance
Gallen.
Language.
Gallen.
I think it's probably just Gallen.
Yeah, well, he signed with them.
That's a pretty big team, isn't it?
It's one of the
fifth,
bigger teams.
Yeah. Fifth last year.
It's one of the bigger teams.
Two
big.
Titles in their history, one cup.
In the Swiss Super League. It is a step backwards. We have to be – you know, like, it's pretty clear at this point, if you look at imports from the Swiss Super League to MLS, these guys don't adjust. Guys like Skelskengashi was literally one of the best players, if not the best player in the Swiss Super League just a couple years ago. Francois Alfalter was one of the better center backs. Xavier Kouassi was one of the top demons.
Now, I don't want to kill Kouassi, though, because his knee.
Yeah, fair. But Jamir Hika was one of the best playmakers. Jerome Tisson, Scott Sutter, Nicholas Hasler. These are all...
Hasler's a...
They're fringe starters.
They're fringe starters at best.
Yeah.
And so Swiss Super League, these are all like regular guys in the Swiss Super League. It's a step backwards for Kakuta Mane, but it's a good shop window. If he lives up to his potential, he's a guy who I still think could end up playing in like a Ligue 1 or the Bundesliga. So hopefully a good move for him.
Some U.S. national team vets on the move. Omar Gonzalez to Atlas Eric Lehigh, a whole city staying in the Champo. Also, Jack Rodwell, according to Sam Stachel, is exploring an MLS move from Sunderland. I mean, anybody who's in
awesome.
Sunderland. They're looking for any way out, man. Give me
he's
that escape hatch.
He's making $5 million
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, happening.
Have
ain't
you,
happening
seen, have you ever seen Jack Rodwell play? Can you believe somebody
like
gave him
ago?
$5 million a year?
I remember when he was, like, a big prize. Like, he was with Man City.
Yeah.
Selling Man City.
Well, he
like
was
a
big
deal.
And strong and fast, and he had a decent enough first touch and a hard shot. But his problem was that he would always anytime he was within 30 yards of the goal, he was going to shoot. It's like his shot
it's
chart
a numbers
is a
game,
nightmare.
Man. If you don't shoot, you can't score.
There you
so
go, Michael Scott.
Can't get paid $5 million if you do that either. Lucky him. The lucky few, man. They get that $5 million paycheck.
You're
up next, dude. If you perform
okay.
well, this is the shop window.
Got it.
That's what I was trying to tell you.
Because you guys are already there.
I'm trying
obviously.
To motivate you.
We all know that.
Yeah. I would back a bus over you if I could get $5 million.
Woo!
Panama and Costa Rica, by the way, out of the World Cup. We're going to keep the World Cup in the mailbag. But, Mark Geiger, Joe Fletcher, and Frank Anderson are going to be on the big stage. They have been selected for the Group F finale between South Korea and Germany. That's a reasonably large game, by the way.
Someone
Mexico, two wins. Possibility that they could perhaps maybe not get through.
I'm sure Doyle is rooting for
– It could happen.
Doyle is rooting for Mexico to
it
be
It could happen.
Wounded,
we'll
obviously.
See.
No comment.
Yeah, we won't address that. Let's talk about the weekend. Let's start with Dome. Not Dominic. Dome. Dome Torrent. That's what he says. He wants to be called Dome. He is in New York City, and he's already picking up 3 points. Toronto FC, the defending champions, the defending treble holders, the defending we got to the finals of CCL and should have won. They didn't win this game. They didn't look great, but NYCFC picked up where they left off. And by that, I mean Joinga Brigette.
Right.
Turned into a baller.
He
mind melded with David Villa.
I think that the number one takeaway from the Dome era is that he's some sort of demon wizard who has the ability to absorb the powers of one soccer player and transfer them to another, because that's clearly what happened with David Villa going off injured. Dome just took his skill and fused it into the essence of Joe Inga
grabbed Brigette. Inga Brigette by the beard.
Right.
And just let the energy flow through
I don't
him.
Know if this kind of dark artistry is legal under MLS guidelines.
Well, if you look at the roster rules, I see nothing there that would prevent that.
I have no explanation for what happened other than that.
TDM is something a lot of teams are going to want to get on top of. Targeted dark magic is, I mean, that's going to be huge for the history of this league. They'll say that this is a turning point. Many years from now.
Just this league or this sport?
Well, this
it's
country.
Just, I mean, it could only
this
be
country.
It could only be applied to soccer, we're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
I guess so,
okay,
unless the NFL
sure
comes gets wise to this and gets it in their area. But look, I mean, he said he wasn't going to make too many changes,
mm-hmm.
but he spouted the you know the Pep Guardiola doctrine, which in some ways you can argue is partially his doctrine, by the way, given that he's been there this entire time with Pep. And
yep.
One man does not a club make, one man does not a philosophy make. He said, we won't change much, we'll change a little.
Mm-hmm.
And he went straight back to win the ball as soon as you lose it and build from there, combine.
I mean, there was some of that. He did. The big thing was that he had Villa starting on the left instead of at center forward, which, you know, Villa's played there before. He obviously played there at Barcelona, and Dome was a part of that staff. They did look a little bit listless at times. They did look a little bit confused through central midfield, which has not been unusual for this team over the past couple of months. And obviously without Yanhel Herrera, they're still trying to figure out the right balance in central midfield. Like that first 45 especially, Toronto FC had their chances. The second 45, Toronto FC didn't come out of it. They didn't come out of the locker room. And NYCFC was good enough and clever enough, I think, especially Maxi Morales' movement, they controlled that second half of the game, for sure.
Where does Maxi Morales rate in the – because there was a time when he was signed where it was like, I don't know about this guy. Was mm-hmm. this a good signing for NYCFC? He didn't necessarily fit the profile you thought they'd be going after, a little bit on the older side, not necessarily a huge name, comes from Mexico, and he has been – he's been great.
Well,
he's been really good.
Before the season show, and I called him the most underrated player in the league, and you guys all laughed at me. Or something. I called him something along those lines.
Okay.
And you guys all laughed at
Your
me,
memory
saying
is
he's
very
not
good,
that good.
And I appreciate that.
And, yeah, I was right.
You were
he's,
right.
He's very good.
He was great. By
last
the
year he just didn't have the box score sets, but he was so integral in the way they built up from the back to the front. It wasn't all just Alex Ring. Younger Herrera was great. He only played 1,100 minutes last year. So there's all that talk about Yonga Herrera. I love Yonga Herrera as a player. But Maxi Morales was the guy that really made that team go throughout the entire course of last season, and then going into this season, Davia is not. He's been in the lineup a little bit. He hasn't performed at the level. I mean, not like MVP level. Sure. Not anywhere that near that talk. And Max Morales has been the guy that has let them do that.
6 goals, 7 assists in 1,425 minutes this year. He is putting up the box score stats this year. He's a very specific type of number 10. You know, he's not out there spraying around through balls. He's more of a guy who
He did that in this match. He did do that, but he's
more of a guy who controls where on the field the game's going to be played. And in that sense, he's basically a younger version of Federico Higuain. And he's putting up numbers similar to what Higuain did at his absolute apex. And it's been working for NYCFC, and this was a good win for them.
What Higuain does so well, and we talk about this on the show all the time, is find those little pockets of space. Know when to move or when not to move, by the way, to receive the ball in good spaces, and then how to turn and where to turn and where he's going with it. And you saw that on the Joe Engelbrecht goal. I mean, he turns, he knows where he's going. He
yep.
puts it on the money. Brigitte finishes. But the unspoken kind of underlying storyline there was Toronto FC basically like slow jogging backwards from, what was it, a set piece, a corner kick, whatever. They had the ball in NYCFC's 18. And then they just like watched the break happened in slow motion, and just, I mean, it looked like me 60 minutes into that game. Straight up out of breath, done.
I don't know how to explain this. I was talking about it with Bobby. I was talking about it with ETR legend Greg Lawless last night as well. Like, what happens to a team? Something has to have happened internally for them to give up on a play like that. Whether it's you know, championship hangover from you know, having won the treble last year and you know, all the publicity around that, whether it's CONCACAF Champions League hangover, which we know very well is a very real thing, and we've seen it with teams like Montreal, with teams like FC Dallas last year.
What is CCL in the pantheon of liquors? Like, what is that? Is that like aguardiente?
Yeah, I guess it would be, right?
You know, like what?
I think it's really good mezcal with the scorpion in the bottle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You drink the whole bottle and you hit the end, you're feeling great, yeah. And then you're on the floor and you wake up and you're like, I don't even know what happened.
Yeah.
It's been a year and a half.
So is that, or it's contract stuff? And I kind of think it's contract stuff because Sebastian Giovinco has been very loud about the fact that he's unhappy that he has not been extended, even though his contract doesn't end until after next year. Jonathan Osorio's people have been negotiating in the press, and I completely understand why, because they gave, you know, the TFC front office gave Aguirre Ekeche, who is a borderline MLS starter, if that, $1.2 million. And like, so if you see a teammate that get that kind of money and not produce, it's going to have a knock-on effect. And I suspect that all of these things have combined to make for a very unhappy, suddenly, TFC locker room.
I think there's obviously that, but then there's also, there has not been a game, there's been so much pressure on this team to win games, because they were playing the CCL, let's say, I'm talking about those 12 to 15 main players.
Yeah.
There was so much pressure on them to win the CCL, so there was so much pressure every single one of those games. Then they come back to MLS, they come in, they're in a hole. And now they had a bunch of injuries, you know, including Josie out the door.
Honestly, I know where you're
and
going.
And every
with
single
this.
Game is like a playoff game. Is that just wearing down them? Wearing down on them a little bit?
I think you can go all the way back to 2016 for that pressure. This is not a solely 2017. We had our big season. It was, you got to the brink in 16. All those games were extremely important as well. This was a team trying to shed that years and years and years of just awfulness by winning a title. They got unlucky. They got beat by a team that didn't even try to take a shot on goal in the final. They went through 2 years. They accomplished everything.
What team was that?
Seattle Sounders.
Okay.
They went through two years of grinding.
Do any of their fans listen to this podcast?
Sounders fans?
Let's give them your Twitter handle so they know who to tweet at.
At Andrew _ Weeby. Actually, the one I check is at Folge.
Okay.
So if you'd like to just hit up at Folge, that would be really convenient.
Continue your rant.
Yeah. 10th place right now, Toronto FC. 15 points. They're averaging 1 point per match. They're pretty average at home, which is not usually the attribute that an MLS playoff team has.
And again, not all. You can't contribute all that to what was going on when they were in the CCL either. They've had some bad results at home with all their guys back.
Absolutely. Toronto fans.
Let not all their guys, because
we have
still
some
waiting.
Toronto fans actually in the mailbag. I didn't put these in, saying, at what point do we doubt Greg Vanney? Is there any creeping doubt about Greg Vanney?
I mean, I don't have doubt about his overall skill set as a manager. I have doubt over whether or not he's going to get this team off the fire this year. And we've seen it from championship coaches in this league before. I mean, Greg Berhalter took the Crew to an MLS Cup appearance in 2015. They missed playoffs in 2016. That's the same team that, you know, for the last 2 years now, it has been really, really good. Caleb Porter won the title in 2015, missed the playoffs in 2016. It's rare that we don't see teams suffer at least a little bit after a good run like that. This level of suffering, though, it has caught me off guard. It looks like it's caught the players off guard as well.
I think, and this is going to – some people are going to say, oh, they're going to go back to the KC Homer bucket with this one. But I think one of the reasons why Sporting Kansas City hasn't had that drop-off, at least in the regular season yet, is because Peter Vermees is controlling the purse strings just as much as he's controlling the playing time. So any sort of issues like this that you see within the locker room, he's the one that you go to. And I don't know if it's Edgar Ekeche, but I do know if I was in that locker room and I was making less than him, I'd have some serious questions I was asking about why that was. We'll see what happens with Toronto FC. It's a long season. They've got plenty of games to play, but, man, the results just keep going the other way right now. By the way, the other side of New York, the Red Bulls, go down to 10 men, and they still beat FC Dallas 3-0. And this is an FC Dallas side that we have become very, very fond of that just didn't show up. I had. You hadn't?
I mean, I saw the results.
Okay.
I was never that impressed
with what they were doing. They were wooing me. We weren't yet in love. Let's put it that way.
You were in that stage.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's a honeymoon stage.
Nah, I was, like, more in the first stage.
Okay, but they didn't show up at Red Bull Arena. And Danny Ware got the red card of all red cards. This is, like, goes in the definition of red card.
Could have easily broken his leg.
Ja'Cory Hayes' leg.
Yeah. Easily broken
Thank God Ja'Cory Hayes appears to be okay in this one. But Red Bulls get goals from all the ways they want to get goals, which is BWP taps one in. They get one off a set piece from Aaron Long. And now I'm forgetting the third one. But it was just the way they wanted it.
It was Kamar Lawrence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jesse Gonzalez beating near post.
Yeah. Kamar Lawrence overlapping with there's only 10 men.
Kaku through ball, sorry.
Yeah, Kaku through. But, like, Kamar Lawrence on the overlap playing as a sort of a fullback with 10 men for the Red Bulls against 11 men FC Dallas. FC Dallas just wasn't prepared. They didn't look like they knew exactly what they wanted to do, which honestly is not all that unusual for when they've played at Red Bull Arena under Oscar Pereja. He's got a terrible record there. I'm not particularly worried about FC Dallas at this point because I really do believe that Pereja has figured out squad rotation and keeping guys hungry and making them earn their spots. And look, that's what happened to Kellen Acosta. He got beat terribly on that first goal. He was not engaged in the game. Tyler Adams beat him to a 50-50 ball and walked into the box and set up BWP for the first goal. And 5 minutes later, Kellen Acosta got the hook. And he was ticked, which he should be, but that's what you have to do. You have to send that message.
Look, they came out in a 5-3-2, mm-hmm. which is not a formation they've typically played. I know he's played with the formations a little bit, but that's not something they've played a lot over the past couple of years. And then as soon as they went down a man, I don't think they really knew what they wanted to do, and that led to what we saw with Barrios coming on for Acosta. Pereja called it a tactical substitution. Acosta walked straight back to the locker room. We were all assuming that he was injured when he does that, because if you do that and you're not injured, there's got to be some sort of disciplinary thing going on.
Right.
How often do you actually see that? And then then you don't bring Mar Diaz in the plane. And that's the guy you want when you're up a man. It's kind of like the Vancouver. Bobby talks about this with Vancouver. That's not really a team that is set up to take advantage of a man advantage.
Right.
Especially without Mar Diaz. Who is pulling the strings? They had nobody pulling the strings. They had three forwards up top. They're all isolated. They had Long and Parker sitting there.
Yep. No, you're not wrong.
There was nothing for them to do.
And one of the disappointments for me was that Paxton Pomykal got on, and he's been so good at the youth levels, and you want to see that translate up, and he was completely ineffective trying to pull the strings from central midfield when he did get on. And this goes back to – I honestly think it goes back to FC Dallas's lack of a USL team the last couple of years, because we've seen Red Bulls be in that situation. And when they bring a kid, whether it's Ben Mines or, you know, Sean Etienne. Davis, Etienne, when they bring in a guy in that situation, that guy tends to contribute. Dallas don't have that luxury, which, you know.
We've got an email here that I just want to push ahead. It's from, let's see, Andrew W. from Brooklyn. Doyle, did you really say this weekend that you'd take Mauro Diaz over Miguel Almiron? If so, please explain.
So there's two ways to look at it, right? Like, what are you – how are you trying to build your team? If you're doing what Atlanta have done, which is decide to be a player in the global game, you want to get a guy like Almiron, have him here for a year and a half, and then sell him on at a profit, go back down to Latin America or maybe from within and find the next one and try to do the same thing all over again. That doesn't breed stability, though. If you get a guy like Mauro Diaz, who because of his style is not going to be in super high demand amongst the best teams in Europe, you could actually get him and build a winning team around him for 5 years. And he's played at an MLS, at an MVP level when he has been healthy. And you win championships. You win titles with that. So I like the stability of a player like Mauro Diaz.
Diaz and stability, I'm not sure that those two things really go together, considering the amount of times he's been injured, Preha leaving him at home, not playing him games. You can't rely on him over a 34-game season.
But this is the magic unicorn. Doyle is actually emotionally blind to this right now.
I understand. He's had some injuries earlier in his career, and he had the big one at the end of 2016. But he came back from that after 6-7 months, and he was not the problem with FC Dallas last year. And he's certainly not been the problem this year. He's been excellent. 2 goals, 8 assists in 807 minutes. I think there's an argument to be made for it.
Yeah, so slight interruption there. Iran almost did it. That's what the World Cup's all about. We had to run away for just a quick second. But we're going to talk about MLS even more
now.
Philadelphia.
Was that Iran or Wanda?
Too soon. Too soon.
Too soon. It's been 4 years.
I know, man. It's still too soon. It'll always be too soon. Philadelphia 4, Vancouver 0. Philadelphia 4, Vancouver 2. Shots on anything. Vancouver 4... Philly 4, sorry. Vancouver 0, no shots on goal.
You're shook a little bit.
I am shook.
You need to take five?
Whoosh. No, let's keep it rolling.
So you're talking about Philly Lona. That's what we're talking about
Philly
right
Lona?
Now?
Philly Lona, what?
Yeah, that's the way they were passing the ball around.
Never again.
No?
You're back on the fringe. You're a fringe starter again.
Barcadelphia?
So
I get what you're saying because they do use the ball a lot, but it's not like it's really more reminiscent of what the Crew does, you know, in terms of getting those fullbacks to push way up.
Columbus?
There you go.
Sorry.
Oh, God. I retire. Goodbye. Getting those fullbacks way up and using the central midfielders, you know, their deeper lying one to ping those diagonal balls around and control where the game is played. The fact that they didn't have that in this one, right, because Warren Cravall was in for Harris Madunian.
Who got suspended.
Meant that they ended up playing more on the front foot defensively. And they did such a good job of bottling up that Vancouver counterattack, which had been so good for, you know, the past month and a half, almost 2 months. It was impressive from Philly because they did it a different way. And when they've been playing well recently, it's been because they have this one thing that they do, and they do it really well. In this game, not that Vancouver's great at all, but like in this game, they did a different thing. And then he did that really well. And when you have those two things, and oh, by the way, Bork Deutschkala is now putting the ball on the net. This is a team, like, they're above the playoff line. It's not an accident.
Nope. In a room full of snarky Twitter heroes here, who mm-hmm. Jim Curtin called out, I believe, on May 19th mm-hmm. for doubting Bork Deutschkala, which, look, the doubt was, I think, warranted. But I think his perspective also warranted, because Deutschkala did not get a preseason. He walked right into this thing and just had to pick it up and figure it out. And he was on the big stage, doing it with the number 10 on his back, doing it as the guy who was supposed to be the answer to their season. Now they're above the playoff line with David Akam basically not showing up. And CJ Sapong
reverting way back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't know what – his numbers probably would have looked better if David Akam and CJ Sapong could actually finish this year.
I went and looked at expected goals, and it looked like he was outperforming expected goals, at least on his side, and expected assists.
That's him shooting, though.
Expected assists as well.
He's at, well, expected assists, the way the OpTic calculates now.
Because they're not looking at the second assist.
That's not what they're, well, they're not looking at. No, they are. They're looking at every single pass and calculating how much that affects a team's ability to score a goal.
Okay.
Positively or negatively. So it's no longer the way they calculate expected. It's no longer just chances created. So it's actually.
That's why you're here.
That's why he's here.
That's a complete look of how a player affects a affects the team. It's a really good stat now. So I think if you're looking at that, I thought he was still playing well at the beginning of the season. He wasn't getting into the box like he is now.
Mm-hmm.
But he was setting his teammates up, and CJ Sapong and David Akam just couldn't finish. And we were talking about them the whole time and saying Dochka isn't good, even though I don't think I ever said that. Not like Doyle. I'm pointing at Doyle.
Say when you point, you have to.
So this is an audio medium. Okay, got it. But I think he could have had 10 assists by now if David Akam and CJ Sapong could have finished.
Here's what Carl Robinson had to say about this game. We got exactly what we deserved out of it, which was nothing. Fair assessment. Brian Rowe, the goalkeeper.
He used the word leggy a lot.
Yeah, Brian Rowe, the goalkeeper, said it was embarrassing. Why did we even get on the plane to play this game if that's what was going to happen when we showed up? We had started praising the Whitecaps. The Whitecaps have played the most games in the Western Conference. They are just hovering above the playoff line, basically, because other teams haven't played as many games.
Well, they're below the playoff line in terms of points per game.
Correct.
So, there's that.
But they were also unbeaten in six.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm
saying. Yeah, unbeaten in six, but four of those are draws.
Four of them are draws.
It's fair.
And that's
why we treated them with skepticism and why I'm still skeptical. That said, you got to give credit where it's due. They had no ideas at the start of the year in terms of – like what they want to do other than like hoof it up from the back and send in crosses. And they did develop over the past month and a half into like they're crossing the ball less. And when they do cross, it's from better spots. And their counterattack was always generated from the back and just lump it up. This was generated by Felipe and whoever he happened to be paired with that week, this past weekend, it was Ali Ghazal, winning the ball at central midfield and then quickly hitting diagonals and getting those guys on the break. Felipe and Ali Ghazal won nothing because they were just dominated by Crivall and Bedoya.
Yeah, Alfonso Davies and Christian Teixeira both pulled at halftime this game.
Yeah.
Robbo pointing at the fact that Davies was coming back from Moscow. No, that was like 10 days ago. So I'm not sure how much
I mean, I haven't been to Moscow, but that's a long flight. That's a long flight.
We'll have to ask Gus when he comes back.
LAFC have got a fellow in Russia. He's doing all right. That's Carlos Vela. They got a win here. Columbus Crew FC go cross country. Don't finish their chances. LAFC do. Two goals within 8 minutes.
Diamande
with a goal.
Yeah. Columbus basically didn't have any chances in this one. This was a really good performance by LAFC.
This is the same thing as Philly, Vancouver, just the other coast.
Yeah. Basically. I mean, it was good. And I think this is like, as you said, Diamande had another goal. He's got four goals in like 300 minutes.
And he's also hasn't really figured out how to play within the team structure yet.
But
he's so selfish right now.
Yeah.
Which I respect. You come into a new team, they play you at striker again because Hull was playing him on like right back.
He's the polar opposite of Marco Arena.
Yeah, well, I said this on Saturday night. Weeby liked it, so I'm going to say it again.
Okay.
He plays like Jossie Zardes with LA and with Columbus in the same game. So like sometimes he'll like get the ball and he'll take it and he'll do one touch and it'll be a goal. And then sometimes he'll get the ball and you can see him thinking. You can see him taking two, three, four touches and dude, just get the ball out of your feet.
Yeah.
He should be touching the ball like the same amount of times that Zardes.
And on this team there's always a runner.
Now.
Right.
There's always a runner coming weak side. There's always somebody on the other. There's always somewhere to go with the ball that's productive. And Lee Wynn comes this game, plays well. Benny Feilhaber continues to play really well, having a little bit of a resurgence of sorts, I would say. Not that he went downhill in Kansas City, but I think his role changed a little bit in his profile. He's right back up there. Bob Bradley is outperforming Atlanta United's 2017 pace right now with LAFC.
Yeah, Atlanta had 21 points through 15 games. LAFC had 27 points through 15 games.
Yeah, but that's affected by the fact that Atlanta had a lot of home games at the end of the season.
It's true. And Ben is a big Atlanta United homer. Any Orlando City fans out there?
I thought it was a New York homer.
At BenBear89, if you're an Orlando City fan and you like to invite
at
Ben.
At BenBear89.
Meet him in Temecula.
Mm-hmm. Hit him up. Better comeback.
I don't know what that means.
Sporting Kansas City over Houston or Colorado over Minnesota?
Two
last-second goals.
Everybody's done it to Houston this year. Like, Houston's dropped 12 points from leading positions. They give up because Wilmer Cabrera, I think he's a good coach, but he makes the worst subs in the world. So he just invites teams forward. So I dock Kansas City points for their comeback, the better comeback. We got to give it up for the Colorado Rapids breaking a 10-game winless skid across all competitions.
The fighting Tommy Smiths.
Hashtag Pids Life.
Thanks to Miguel Ibarra in part. That was a turning point for you. A little punch to the back of the head. Yeah. Off he goes. Jack Price runs in there like he's been in a bar fight or two. Just speculating there. Mm-hmm. He was the first one in.
You're stereotyping, just for the record.
Well, I'm not
stereotyping. Just because he's English doesn't mean he gets in bar fights.
You ever been to Hull, though? No, he's from Wolves. Never mind.
I've never been to England.
Different
so
part of,
there you go.
I think it's Northwest, yeah. I mean, he clapped Miguel Ibarra's head like a cymbal. Fortunate for him, it was negligible contact, so he didn't get sent off. But Jack Price came in there steaming, which I appreciate that from him. But look, they needed a win.
It's helpful when Brent Coleman just falls down.
That is also very
helpful.
On
a through ball and just gives Joe Mason a clear path.
Joe Mason looking like the goal scorer that he is when defenders fall on their face and roll twice.
That was one of the more shambolic moments I've ever
seen.
That
is one of the most shambolic moments.
Literally just fell.
I did not expect to hear the word shambolic on this podcast today.
It's unfortunate. The things that happened in Minnesota United central defenders.
Yeah.
That's not like.
Wyatt Omsberg got dunked on that.
It's literally all four of them at this point.
Like Francisco Calvo plays out wide for Costa Rica.
I mean,
he looks fine. He plays in the middle for Minnesota. I mean, you got circus music playing in the background.
It's been bad for Minnesota. They've now won just once in their last six. Once in the last seven, if you include losing in the Open Cup to what was essentially Houston's reserves, their B team, I do start to wonder if maybe Adrian Heath's seat is going to get a little bit hot, because at this point they are literally no better than they were last year, even though they have
Darwin Quintero
been really good.
Had the pass of the week on that Christian Ramirez goal.
He basically had the assist on the first goal too.
Yeah.
Rebounds, whatever.
You know, and I think the more disturbing thing is that the young players haven't improved. Abu Dhanladi has looked lost when he's gotten on the field this year.
And that's his guy.
Mason Toy was not as effective in this game in June as he was in March and April. Wyatt Omsberg has barely gotten on the field and has been lost when he does. And this team, like, I don't see any signs of progress.
Colorado 3, Minnesota 2, big win. Tommy Smith with the header. They went crazy at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Look, I appreciate that. They've had better crowds than I expected. When you're losing like this, I don't expect a lot of fans in the stands. And when I watch these games, I'm like,
yeah, it's doing standing in Colorado.
Standing ovation for the ticket sales staff. There, RSL 1, San Jose 1, Seattle 1, Chicago 1, Atlanta 1, Portland 1.
We're not even talking about SKC.
We can. Daniel, what do you want to say? I already put a video out. Yeah.
People think that Bobby's smart, and then he says Daniel Shalloway isn't good.
I don't know how I feel about Ben stabbing folks in the back when they're not even in the room to defend themselves.
Oh, really?
It's such an amateur move.
Who would ever do that? I don't know who would ever do that.
Ben invented a twistable knife just for this moment.
Seriously. Yeah. No, please continue.
No, Bobby has said, I don't know if this has all been on air, but he said many times that he does not think Daniel Shalloway is good.
He's a shallowy doubter.
You don't know if it's been on air, so you're just like, you're taking private conversations now.
It has been on air.
I'm pretty sure it has been on air.
Last show, which I praised Daniel Shalloway, because I've been on this boat since like last summer.
Just revealing private conversations.
Goal and two
assists. On a podcast that gets, we'll say tens of thousands of listens.
Dozens of listens.
Dozens. Many dozens. I mean, every podcast technically gets some iteration of dozens of listeners.
There are dozens.
Let's get your scouting report on Daniel Shalloway. What do you think? Because I'm on board.
I'm on board, too. He started this game as a number nine. He kind of plays it as a false nine.
That's not where he should play.
Yeah, and he ended it as a winger. I think he's really smart about combining in the final third. Like he just seems to have an instinct for the rhythm of the game. He's not a visionary passer, but every pass is the right pace, right to feet.
Yeah, he executes.
And once he releases the pass, he's smart about understanding where the next pocket of space is. So he's always getting the ball with just a little bit more time than the guys around him, and you know, he executes, and he's, what, 5 goals, 6 assists this year in about 1,100 minutes?
7 goals if you count both competitions. He's leading Sporting Kansas City in goal scoring because Felipe Gutierrez, he was banging the ball in the back of the net. Then he got hurt. Johnny Russell was looking like a was looking like a, I don't know, like a $4 million player, and then he's not been as good since. And Daniel Schott always picked up the spot. He needs to be in space in some way, whether that's coming back into the center of the field from space where he's not easily tracked, or whether he's 1v1 with players. He may not be the fastest. He might not be the most physical looking. But as you saw in that final play against Adam Lundqvist, who he made it look like he was running in cement boots, he creates space. And he understands what to do with that space. He's just 21. He'll be 22 this summer.
So
a great signing for them.
I think.
And a sneaky homegrown signing for them, which Peter Vermees has kind of made that a point. I don't know if we want to highlight that,
but okay.
Yeah, why not? That's great business for Peter Vermees. He brought him over. He stashed him in somebody's house for like a year.
It was
in the
for
academy
like Chaloy
for like
is,
8 months.
Chaloy is the son of a former teammate of Peter Vermees.
Correct.
In Hungary, which is what the connection is. And the kid's good. And a couple years ago, they realized, like, okay, let's send him to Kansas City and he'll become homegrown.
I think what Bobby finds trouble with a guy like Chaloy, because Bobby always wants to put a player in a specific box of, like, if he does this well, he does this in a tactical way, but you can't say that with Daniel Schott, because he's just out there, he's going to find the ball, he's going to find space.
If the kid was 34 years old, Bobby would think he was the best player in the league. This period. That's just Bobby Warshaw right there.
Oh, boy. All right. Atlanta-Portland. I think that's the one I would choose from this 1-1 madness that we have going down here. What did we see in this one on Sunday? Well, we saw Darlington Nagbe come off with an injury. They're saying maybe adductor. Mm-hmm. See what happens with him. I don't want to say he
scored a goal when he was down. They scored a goal over his corpse. it was
Portland went back to NYCFC zone. I mean, understandably so. Why extend yourself?
They start
at Mercedes-Benz.
Right. They play usually a pretty defensive 4-3-2-1. This was an even more defensive, like 5-3-1-1. They had five because, like, if you're playing Atlanta, you have to decide whether you want to deny service from guys like Almiron, like Gressel, like Barco, or do you want to have the extra man in the box to track Joseph? And they, and Giuseppe Arezzo decided, we want the extra man in the box to track Joseph. And so Atlanta had all the ball. They served a ton of crosses in. In the second half, they came out and they held the ball a little bit deeper and tried to play over the top, and they got close a lot. But they didn't create a ton of perfect looks. They didn't create a ton of great looks. And they left the door open wide enough for Portland to hit him on the counter a couple times, and one of those ended up being a goal. It was very reminiscent of that NYCFC game a couple months back in terms of how it looked, in terms of how it played out. Obviously, Atlanta got the point.
Atlanta United still on top of the Supporters Shield standings, 34 points from 17 games. They're averaging 2 points per game. That's the same for Sporting Kansas City, who are also on top of the Western Conference. Let us know what you think of MLS Week 17. 401-206-0-MLS. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. We're going to go to break. On the other side, we're talking Orlando. They lost 2-0 to Montreal at home, and Paul Tenorio has the lowdown on their coaching search.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Andrew Wiebe, Matt Doyle, Ben Bear in the green room. On the line now, who else? You heard the music. Paul Tenorio of The Athletic. If you're not subscribing, you like MLS content, that is a great place to go right about now. Paul, what's up, man? How's it going?
It's going well. You know, I'm just I'm over here kind of semi-rooting for upsets to go into this knockout phase of the World Cup, man. Just totally absorbed in the tournament.
Everybody is, but if you're an Orlando fan, you're totally absorbed in the uncertainty at the top of the coaching staff, because Bobby Murphy's the man right now, but he is interim, and it is going to stay that way. Somebody will come in and fill that spot, and Paul, you're as plugged in on this club as anybody in the kind of little soccer sphere that we live in. What's going on?
Yeah, I think the coaching search, for me, at least from what I've heard, is maybe a different than what people were initially projecting. A lot of people felt this was for sure going to be an international coach coming in. After a few days of the search, I started to hear, sounds like Orlando City's, kind of zeroing in on some domestic targets. Whether that will be the case when Nicky Vujicic ends up, you know, giving his list of candidates to the ownership remains to be seen. But, you know, Caleb Porter was one coach who was one of the first interviewed by Orlando City. It was an in-person interview, and I think he's one of their top targets right now.
Who are the other names on that list at the moment?
Well, two of the other names I was able to confirm is James O'Connor, Louisville City, obviously won a USL championship last year, strong connection to Orlando City, played there when they were in the USL, very familiar with the club, you know, has some connections there still. And then Mark Dos Santos, another coach who's done very well in the lower divisions as a head coach in multiple different spots and in multiple leagues, and is now an assistant coach on Bob Bradley's staff. Both of those coaches are under consideration by Orlando City as well.
Do you expect there to be any sort of disconnect between what, let's say, Nicky comes with and the ownership wants? Because when I look at Flavio De Augusta Silva, he tends to like a splashy move, and he has all those connections in Brazil. And so when the names like Dunga and Big Phil started coming out, that sort of clicked for me in the way that at least I thought that he approached the game and the connections that he had.
Yeah, well, I think certainly there is a little bit of that, you know, desire to kind of bring in a big name that's always been, especially a Brazilian or Portuguese big name. That's kind of been the way the club has functioned. But I think what's tempering that just a little bit is the fact that they want to win this year. And they put together a group with a lot of allocation money on the table with the expectation to make the playoffs this year. And there might be a little bit of a hesitation to be able to say that, you know, a foreign coach can come in and take this group over and get to know the league and get to know this team and get them to the playoffs this year. That might be why a name like Caleb Porter starts to become a little bit more appealing. He's got that knowledge of MLS. He's familiar with the players that are already on the roster. Most of them are MLS guys. And that kind of transition, I think, for Mark Dos Santos and James O'Connor, both, you know, guys who have worked domestically, that's another reason why they are appealing to Orlando City right now.
But we're not ruling out the likes of a Scolari or a Dunga or even a Carlos Quiroz just yet.
No, I've heard that maybe there are some within the club who don't want it to go that direction, but that certainly does not mean that the owner does not want to go in that direction or won't if those coaches are willing to agree to the right type of deal. And you know, I think money is going to be a big factor in this. But yeah, I would not put anything past Orlando City at this point.
Any idea on the ultimate timeline for the decision?
I know that they want to get the deal done this week if possible, but you know, I was also told that they're not going to rush things. And from what I understand, some people I've talked to around the league, they've been making a lot of phone calls, doing their due diligence on just about every coach that they talk to, you know, making multiple phone calls, talking to multiple people about the backgrounds of those coaches who have worked with them before. So, you know, they want to get this right, but you know, I do know they've been putting in a lot of legwork. I would expect that they try to come to a decision by the end of this week. They understand the position they're in and that, you know, time is not on their side. But I don't think that they're going to make a too quick of a decision if they don't have to.
19 points right now from 16 games, eighth place in the Eastern Conference. That is a significant drop from where they were after that six-game win streak, Paul. When you look at this result this weekend, 2-0 against Montreal, when you look at the roster, when you kind of weigh that side that says, we spent all this money, we got to make the playoffs, what task does any coach have coming in? Can they actually do this? Can they turn a team around that really just was built in large part this offseason?
Yeah, well, that's the hard part, right? There's two elements to this. First of all, I think there's enough talent on this roster. The first task is going to be to fix things defensively. They've got to find the right group, and then they've got to get them playing cohesively. They've had struggles at the fullback position, at the center back position. Injuries have contributed to that. They've just added Shane O'Neill to add a little bit more center back depth. I think when you start to look at the rest of the roster, the midfield and the forwards and the wingers, there is talent there. But, you know, I'm interested to see if you're a coach coming in, you know, there are some contracts on this roster that I don't love for next year. I mean, you're essentially committing to this group for 2 years. I would be interested in the conversations about guys like Justin Merrim and Sasha Kljestan, who are on big money deals, who haven't really quite fit so far in Orlando. You know, does a coach come in and say, hey, let's try to offload that contract in this summer window? It felt like the comments from Alex Letao were maybe a reaction to some coaches in the interviews alluding to that, because he said, we need to find a coach who knows that this is his roster, this is his team, and we want to make the playoffs this year. But, you know, I would expect that any coach coming in is going to take a look at this group and say, look, I know you just put these pieces together, but we need to make a couple changes.
See, and that's the part that's a little bit, I don't know, confusing to me, let's say, when the focus continues to be on this year, on making the playoffs this year. Sounds like something's going on that we're missing right now, by the way, in the World Cup. And then I look at this club and the turnover they've had, and I think the best clubs in this league, the most successful clubs who sustain it, they have a plan for long term. They have a plan for multiple years, and you just kind of canned your plan, which was Jason Christ and the players that he wanted for his system. So how do you balance this year and the fact that you've got to figure it out in a bigger sense to be successful over the next 5 years, which is ultimately should be the goal?
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, right? I mean, that's been the issue with Orlando City from the moment they started in MLS, is that they've had these long-term plans, quote-unquote, that they've put together and that they've built rosters off of. And then after a year and a half within those plans, three-year plans, or a year into those three-year plans, they blow things up again. In this case, we saw a plan where, you know, they put all the chips in on guys like Justin Mara, Sasha Kljestan, adding all the pieces they did this offseason, and halfway through a season, they fire the coach, which would, you know, look to be like, hey, we're giving up on this plan already. It's the big issue that Orlando City is going to have to work through, because this team is not a long-term team. There's going to have to be more changes that happen. Again, I think that you're stuck with this roster through the end of next year for the most part, unless you make moves this summer. I think it's going to be a lot harder to move some of the guys on this roster next winter just because of the size of the contract and the age. But I just don't feel like they have one vision. They don't really have one voice, and they don't have the patience, and they're going to have to find that if they want to be successful, or else we're going to keep talking about them the same way we talked about Toronto FC in their first decade in MLS.
So who should be that voice? Is it Budalic? Is it Alex Letao? Does it come from the owner himself?
Yeah, well, you know what? I think, you know, I actually wouldn't mind. I think it would be good if the owner was himself a little bit more involved in the day-to-day. I actually think, you know, his history as a businessman has shown he can be successful, and I think he's got good ideas. I would expect that, you know, eventually you have to give trust to the general manager and say, you're our long-term guy. You're setting the course of this roster. You have control over who the players are in conjunction with a coach. Nicky Budalic has kind of been given that power. You know, I think he'll be coming up for a contract at the end of next year. You know, do they give him an extension now and say, look, we trust you. You're our guy. Let's find the vision going forward, including selecting the coach. Or do they continue to kind of have guys coaching for their jobs, putting rosters together for their jobs, knowing that they can be changed at any second? My thing would be, hey, give Nicky the power, let him push things forward, and maybe have everyone else take a step back as a voice in the room.
If you had to be, if I was putting you on the spot, which I am, by the way, and you're a betting man here, where do you think they go with this? Who do you think is the front runner?
I think the front runner, if I had to say anyone, you know, I think Caleb Porter would be the name that probably is the front runner. I think it's going to come down to money. You know, Jason Christ was making a good amount of money in relation to other MLS coaches. He's still obviously going to be getting paid, as well as his staff. Do they have enough money to go get Caleb Porter, who's going to demand a similar salary to Jason Christ and is going to want that kind of money? Can they pay that much money? If they can, then they have to weigh, well, you know, would we pay an extra $200,000 for a big name foreign coach who's going to want even more than Caleb? I think they'll land on Caleb Porter. I think the money will be there. But that's going to have a huge, huge factor in this hire.
That brings up the next question. Paul, what the hell has Caleb Porter been doing? He walked away from from that Portland job. I mean, that was not him getting fired. It was not his contract running out. He walked away from that Portland job, and as we see under Chio Savarese, that's still a really good team. Has any light been shed on what exactly happened last autumn and what makes him now, potentially 6 months, 7 months later, ready to get back into the game?
Well, I've been working hard trying to be the one to tell that story. It hasn't happened yet. I think Caleb's been essentially kind of, you know, itching to get back into coaching, basically sitting around trying to look and be patient and at the same time kind of keeping an eye on everything in MLS, waiting for that right job to come around. Anyone who's kind of been around Caleb knows his personality type. He likes to work. He likes to be involved. He loves the game, and he wants to get back into coaching. I think that certainly is going to have an impact. And when you look at this Orlando job, if you're Caleb, yes, you know, I think every coach thinks, hey, it'll be different under me. Ownership will be different and the atmosphere will be different. And you look at everything else, it's a great job. Great fan base, great stadium, all grass. They've spent money on big DPs. They've spent money on TAM guys. So it's a very attractive job for Caleb. I think the issues in Portland were, you know, maybe he felt like he had done the best he could do with that group. You know, he wanted to make some wholesale changes. It wasn't going to happen. And, you know, I don't know for sure that he wanted to make wholesale changes, but I think he felt he had taken that group as far as he could take them and was ready for the next challenge. It'll be interesting to see if it ends up being Orlando. More interesting is if it's not Orlando, what is the next job for Caleb Porter that's better than that Portland job? What job does he look at and say, you know what, this is the right job for me? He's going to have to be patient for that to happen. I don't know that there are too many jobs out there that are on that same level.
Yeah, he and Chris Klein were at Indiana together.
You know what? It'd be interesting to see. This is another area I'm still trying to confirm. Is there any kind of non-compete that happened in that buyout? Would Portland allow Caleb Porter to take a job with the LA Galaxy? I'm not so sure. It would come down to whatever that buyout agreement says.
There's a lot of unknowns here, but we are going to find out soon who the next head coach for Orlando City is. Go follow Paul Tenorio on Twitter for all his insight, all the latest from The Athletic, at Paul Tenorio. Hit that follow button. Paul, enjoy seeing your work there, man. Good talking to you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
All right, big thanks to Paul there. If you have not read his feature on Efren Alvarez over there at The Athletic, make sure you go do so. The young man is extremely talented, tearing up USL for LA Galaxy 2. He's right now with Mexico, but he still says it's open. He's not sure. He's a young man. He's a teenager. He can do what he wants.
But I thought, oh, we're not just following the narrative of just the U.S. is not talking to people, and, you know, people don't make their own decisions. Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, there's a lot of narratives, Ben. It's okay. Things get boiled down.
You know, sometimes when you're 16 years old or you're 18 years old or you're 19 years old, sometimes you don't. You just want to play. You just have a personal decision. It's not affected
but,
by other.
But that's.
Other
but look, when you were 16, you knew you were going to be the king of takes one day. It was just about.
Well, that was a definite. That we knew that. Yeah, we knew that at five.
We shouldn't treat this like this is mysterious though, because like, okay, it's a personal decision, but 16-year-olds all across this country get recruited by big time college basketball and college football teams. It's happening right now.
For sure.
As we're speaking, it happens in soccer too. It's obviously not the same amount of pressure. And these guys make personal decisions, but these decisions are influenced by how hard and how well you recruit them. Absolutely.
It is. And what it is you're portraying to the outside world and what you represent within, I'm not going to say pop culture, but the world at large. So, like, you're going to roll your eyes at me. Like, KU basketball is on national TV all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to come to Kansas. Nobody goes to Kansas. Nobody takes a vacation in Kansas. Nobody chooses to go there unless you're going to go there for a specific reason. And basketball players have a reason, and they see us in good places all the time. What's happening this summer? Where's the U.S. national team? Anybody watching them? Anybody caring about them? Anybody talking about them? Anybody dreaming of playing for them right now?
No.
Maybe if you saw Timothy Weah go play pickup. Maybe if you went to – you know, if you watch some of these friendlies, Mexico are on the big stage. They look great. Their young players are looking good. Chucky Lozano is one of the stars of the World Cup.
I'm going to add to what Doyle said is that these guys also change their mind constantly.
For sure, in both recruiting processes. It's uncertain.
Yeah, if you follow basketball, football recruiting, which I do a little bit because both my teams are generally good at both sports.
Well,
these guys change their mind all the time.
That's debatable.
Commits. There was a famous case, you know, in our group where a player committed to Wisconsin to play basketball, and then he started getting recruited by the big schools.
Well, he was good. People figured out he was good.
And then he went to Kentucky.
Look, Efren
Alvarez. These guys changed their mind. And Efren Alvarez, and he disputed something that was reported previously. I forgot exactly what it was. But Efren Alvarez disputed the fact that he wasn't contacted by somebody.
Right.
It's so up in the air. I don't think he has any idea what he wants to do long term yet. I mean, and that's what Paul wrote.
Yeah. Go read the piece. It's a good piece. Let's talk about the All-Star 11. The Fan 11 is now out at MLSsoccer.com. You could go check that one out if you'd like. We've got an email here from Daniel West before we get to the actual names here. Atlanta United fans have ruined fan voting. Villa was robbed of goal of the year by the same ballot stuffing. Tata wins best dress for wearing a polo, and now the All-Star game is an Atlanta United friendly. There needs to be reform. He gets the winky face in there, but that's absolutely correct. At some point, vote with your conscience.
Wasn't that like my manifesto before the season?
Was it?
Again, I think this is all in the same show that I referenced before.
Well, you'll have to go back and find
that
the proof.
Vote with your heart, with your head, not your heart.
There you go.
But I love how people keep this best dress thing has a long shelf life, long tail here.
Yeah, it's stuck in people's craw because he's out there like wearing sweatshirts as capes. over polos. I mean, he's like, he won that
style.
Tata won that, and he consciously was like, you know what? I'm going to go double down on don't care, which actually right now.
That's not a good look.
My girlfriend tells me in the fashion world is very in.
Yeah.
Not caring.
Chunky shoes, big sweaters that don't fit you.
It's like the early 90s all over.
Yeah, basically.
That's what I wear in Brooklyn, right?
Right. Yeah. Come on over.
You're so fashion forward, man. Uh-huh.
Nobody will know you're from the Upper East Side when you get to nobody. Nobody will have any idea at all. Brad Guzan, the goalkeeper on the Fan 11. Laurent Simon, LFC central defender. Michael Parker is keeping the Atlanta United theme going on defense. Graham Zusi from Sporting Kansas City in this list. Miguel Miron, Ezekiel Barco, Darlington Nagbe. Three of the four midfielders come from Atlanta United. Diego Valeri get the call at the other spot. And then the forwards are Zlatan Ibrahimovic, L.A., Joseph Martinez, you guessed it, Atlanta United, and Carlos Vela of LAFC. Overall, pretty good list. Scratch some names off the Atlanta one, though, I think. Who would you remove if this was just your 11, your fan 11?
Barco?
That's the first one off?
Easily.
Yeah. There's no other answer.
I think Nagbe would also be off that for
me. He'd be off it, but Barco would be the first.
Yeah, but Barco would be the first one.
Three goals and an assist. Like he's been good, and you see flashes of why they made the investment. But like, come on.
Simon's out here trying to get us to do pieces almost every weekend about how he's a potential bust. His point being that a player who is bought for $15 million must perform better than this. Have I given you a headache right now, Doyle?
He's also 18 years old.
We gotta talk to Simon about antagonizing the fans.
Yeah. He might teach antagonizing 101. Who are we putting in here? Because Tata's got 11 choices, and then Commissioner Garber has two choices. Bobby Warshaw put his out on the site today. Here's who he went with. Tim Melia. In goal.
He's been good. I don't think he's been the best goalkeeper.
I would go Zach Steffen, although Zach Steffen's got the knee issue.
No.
Ben's about to say the right name.
Matt Turner?
Yep.
I mean, I like...
Easily Matt Turner.
Okay. All right.
Zach Steffen hasn't been that good.
He's been good.
He's been fine.
Yeah. He's been better than fine, but that's fine.
All right. Milton Valenzuela, he has a defense. Keegan Rosenberry, Aaron Long, Matt Hedges.
I don't think Hedges. No.
I also think... I think Keegan Rosenberg, he's a little bit of a stretch right now.
A little bit.
Harrison Offal is the best right back in MLS.
Yeah, I don't know how you don't
So the problem is he's that he didn't want to do two Columbus players.
Right, I would sacrifice Milton Valenzuela for Harrison Offal.
Who's your left back then?
You know what? I should have figured that out before I made that statement to you.
You could make the argument that Betashur could be right back. Betashur has been excellent for LAFC.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he also says, there's no – left back is a pretty dire state right now.
We're always talking about that, though.
I feel like sometimes it's right back and sometimes it's left back and it kind of shifts back and forth.
I mean, Kamar Lawrence has been excellent.
Yeah, actually, timeout, Kamar Lawrence.
Danny Acosta has been really good since he got back into the lineup.
Kamar Lawrence has been special
at left back.
I agree.
He should be Kamar Lawrence and then Harrison
And
Offal.
Honestly, if you're going to pick someone from, not to say he should be in there over Harrison Offal, but if you're going to pick someone from Dallas, it should be Reggie Cannon. Reggie Cannon has locked that down. Like, they're not giving up goals up that right side. But anyway.
Aaron Long or Tim Parker? Did he go right with Aaron Long?
I'm Team Long.
I don't think you can go wrong, but I think Parker's been a little bit better.
Bobby in the midfield had Bastian Schweinsteiger, Diego Chará, Tyler Adams, and Kaku.
That's a good list.
Yeah, it's a good list. I'm there with Diego Chará. I think get him in the game.
Yeah.
Not only has he been the best defensive midfielder in the league this year, I just think that at some point you have to give him some Nick Raimondo treatment, which is we've ignored you for so long. No longer. Just give him something. It's not like defensive player of the year. It's just an all-star nod. It's a bonus. It's recognition for
it's not
being
just
behind the other Diego.
All-star nod is still an all-star nod.
I know. It's
still
important.
An honor.
It is important.
It's important. There's bonuses attached to it. That's pretty big.
Schweinsteiger.
I mean, I'm going to go with my guy Carter. I think Ilya has been really good. Carter Augustin from SBC.
No, he hasn't.
I think he's been pretty good.
He hasn't been as good as last year.
He was really good last year.
He was really good last year. He's not been as good this year.
Kaku,
who,
I think,
who,
is
who's been the best demon in the
Kaku
league?
Kaku has to be pushed.
Last year
either,
was pretty obvious.
Either Adams or Chara. Bobby got the right two.
Up top for Bobby, Brad Lurette Phillips and Ignacio Piatti. And then he has his commissioner picks, Alfonso
Piatti.
Davies.
Yeah, Piatti's, Piatti was
Federico
the one
Wayne.
Major quibble head.
Piatti
with
is a quibble for me as well. Piatti started out really well. He's got a lot of goals in a few games.
He has like one goal in his last. He scored this week, but then.
Right.
He hasn't scored a lot.
There are a lot of forward options. I mean, I could argue Teal Bunbury over Ignacio.
He doesn't have Jossie Zardes. I mean, you can't have all strikers, but he doesn't have Jossie Zardes. I would put Fagundes has been really good.
It's been all right.
It's been better than Piatti.
It, to me, it's easy. It's Vela and BWP.
Vela's already in.
Vela, yeah, he got the EA.
He's fan 11.
You scored on FIFA,
though. Yeah, he's already in. He's part of the 11. But Bobby also is BWP. So who else you got?
There's like, there basically is almost nobody on this list from NYCFC. Can I just throw that out there? That
Maxi Morales has
one of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, Maxi Morales has 6 goals, 7 assists.
Tajiri
Shradi's been banging him in. David Villa has 8-4. Aren't a lot of guys
That's
better
than
that? His first name off.
I think there's no way. I mean, he has Pipe Higuain in here as a commissioner's pick. There's no way that's not David Villa. Between Higuain and Villa, I feel like.
You don't think that Higuain's going to be there?
I think he could
be,
but
brother
not as a
might not be that.
Pick.
The problem is,
That's a good point.
The narrative is that his brother is going to be there.
Right.
But is his brother going to be there?
Your narrative radar is just boop, 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 boop.
Where are the rumors?
Nothing's getting into your airspace.
It depends how far Argentina goes, which I guess we'll find out on Tuesday, right?
What about Albert Elise?
Albert Elise should have been. Yeah.
I would have him there for Piatti. But again, Albert Elise is 22 and Piatti is like 67. So Bobby rates Piatti higher. That's just the way it goes.
Which Atlanta player got screwed the most by the 6 Atlanta players going in the fan ballot? It's got to be Julian Gressel.
Yeah, you could argue that the best pure right-sided player in the league this year has been Gressel. Like he made that 3-5-2 work, which they played for the bulk of this season. He's been excellent.
Vela does play on the right. Just want to point that out.
I said pure right-sided player. Vela cuts inside.
Okay.
He plays more.
That's how I don't know how you're defining right-sided player.
I mean, it's fair because a right wing back isn't quite the same thing as a right back, but they do serve roughly the same functions. Difference between a back three and a back five.
At least for Piatti is the major flaw in that whole entire list.
Well, let us know what you think. You had your say in the Fan 11. Tata will have his say this week. I believe the roster will come out, I don't know, sometime this week. I'm not making any promises here. Let us know. Of course, we'll be at the All-Star game.
I will be there.
Well, will you?
First time ever.
Oh.
First time you've ever been to an All-Star game?
Well, I went to the one at RBA against Man U, but that was as a fan.
Okay.
I think Extra Time Live is going to be trying to, perhaps, can't promise here. Buy some food and drink for the parking lot. I hope ahead of time, maybe Dave and I are just going to tailgate that day.
I'm going to be there, too.
That's our plan.
Doyle's going to be there, too.
Yeah, we can really come. Really, you're going?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, don't you like the communication amongst
us? No, we had no idea. Yeah. ATL, it's going to be hopping.
Yeah, I've never been to Atlanta, so I'm pretty jazzed about it.
We're going to be sweating a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
You're going to be sweating a lot.
I don't handle.
Weeby's looking at me. This is an audio medium. Weeby was looking at me when he said that.
Fill in the blank. You or Doyle. It wouldn't have mattered. Anybody would have believed either.
I also want to go to Nashville for the U.S.-Mexico game.
Pack a bunch of linen.
I gotta get some hot chicken.
All right. Well, maybe in the break. We'll be right back. Go to the mailbag. See you there.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, hanging out in the green room. It's mailbag time, 401-206-0MLS. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com is the email. We often get our most inspired mail through the email. Kevin Chan hit us up via the Hot Take Hotline. Is Doyle on the Juan Carlos Osorio bandwagon yet, or does Mexico need to make it to the quarters before he's willing to consider him a U.S. national team candidate?
I would never want to see Juan Carlos Osorio as the U.S. national team head coach. And, like, he has been excellent through 2 games in this World Cup. He got the tactics so right against Germany, and he got to dap him up for that. And he got the tactics, I think, very right against South Korea, and he's gotten his personnel mostly right. And it reminds me so much of the 2008 playoffs with the Red Bulls, because that team was really talented that year. They had the league's best DP that year in Juan Pablo Angel. They had a young Jozy Altidore. They had a good and talented roster overall in every freaking game. Every game, he would different formation, different lineup, nonsensical subs, drawing a completely different line of confrontation. Sometimes they'd play on the front foot. Sometimes they'd play. And none of it ever made any sense. And never any rhythm built up. And then came the playoffs, and he finally said, you know what? We're just going to play a 4-1-3-2. We're going to put our best players in their best spots. We're going to try to have a good amount of the ball in central midfield, and we're going to use that to open up the flanks. And he simplified, and it was great, and they made it all the way to MLS Cup, and they got beat by a better team. But I thought, okay, this man gets it, and he's going to come back the next year, and he's going to build off of that, take what works, build off of that foundation, and make it better. And in 2009, he made it worse. He just made it every week. He would do something worse and worse and worse. And honest to God, that is the worst soccer team I have ever seen in MLS. It was terrible. They made 2013 DC United look like Barcelona. So that
2013 DC United was really bad for people who don't know that. Kind of they were like the worst team in MLS history.
That
Columbus or
yeah, that is my very personal memory of Juan Carlos Osorio.
The scar tissue is,
and if you look at his thick. If you look at his career, he's been able to establish this narrative where he's a miracle worker. But whether it was in Colombia, whether it was certainly in Mexico where he was terrible, whether it was in Brazil, the guys before him and after him at those respective clubs all had better records than Juan Carlos Osorio did. And then he somehow ended up with this Mexico job. And granted, I'm going to say it again, he has had two spectacular performances in these first two games. This is as good as I've ever seen his teams play, and as smart and well-executed a game plan as you can possibly have against a team as good as the Germans. But that does not erase what happened last summer in the Gold Cup. It doesn't erase what happened last summer in the Confederations Cup. And it sure as hell doesn't erase what happened in 2016 in the Copa America. When they got, not only did they get smoked, was it 7-1?
I think so, yeah.
By Chile? They got totally.
That could have been 10-1.
They totally got outplayed by Venezuela and Jamaica in the previous two games. And those teams did the exact same thing Chile did. And he made zero adjustments. So, yeah, nice two games. But no, no, that does not override three tournaments of abject failure from Juan Carlos Osorio. So no, I do not ever want to see him in the frame for U.S. national team. Never.
That was arguably the best rant in Extra Time Radio history.
That was pretty good.
That was a great rant.
Again, I love people parachuting in to see these two games.
Based on that rant, I now feel ashamed of my performance on the last.
Yeah. See what JCO has done in these two games. If people are parachuting in saying, this guy's a genius, this guy's best coach. You haven't been paying attention for the past 3-4 years that he's been running Mexico. On their send-off game, they were chanting Fuera Osorio. Now, this is Mexico, and they would fire their coach, and that's probably not a good chant for the game, last game before the World Cup. But there was nothing to indicate that this was going to happen. Nothing. They scored one goal over the last four friendlies. They got dominated by Denmark in I think it was the second, maybe their last game before the World Cup. Dominated. And there was nothing to say that this was going to happen.
You know what it reminds me of? Jurgen Klinsmann, 2006.
What is that? But I'm just thinking of Klinsmann in general.
Klinsmann in general. But Klinsmann with Germany in 2006, they were going to fire him in March of that year. And Jogi Löw and Michael Ballack went to him and said, you have to stop being a lunatic with this team. You have to just simplify everything. And Jurgen listened, and they just went to a bog standard 4-4-2 from that point on, and that led to a great and really stable performance in the 2006 World Cup. And of course, everybody thought Jurgen learned his lesson from that. He did not. But this is exactly what happened. There was no indication that this would be Juan Carlos Osorio. But for whatever reason, he has seen the light. Temporarily, I guarantee it, he has seen the light and has decided
to go for stability and cohesion and chemistry, and it's paying off for Mexico, and I'm happy I'm not going to root for Mexico, but I'm happy for all my friends who happen to be Mexico fans, and I hope they enjoy it. It is not going to last, and whoever hires him next is going to learn that to their detriment.
I feel like I should just end the show right now. I want to end it, but we have such good mail. CI Demand says, guys, argue the pros and cons of MLS suspending play during the 2026 World Cup. My position, MLS should play on so foreign fans can come to games during their off days, but I could be talked out of this.
No, that's a great.
What do you think?
I like that. Yeah, foreign fans going to MLS games, then they get indoctrinated to MLS. Look, 8 years from now, we have no idea where MLS is going to be.
It's going to be a league of choice.
It's going to be a league of choice. We know that. So, I think, you know, definitely during, not like this World Cup, but previous World Cups, it's been the entire stage of group play. We'll obviously see that in 2026. It's not going to be the 9 days that we had off here. You know, all of us getting our rest over the last 9 days, obviously.
So we're completely ruling out the idea that MLS will be bigger than the World Cup in 2026?
I'm going to go ahead and err on the side of caution with this one. Yeah, look, I think there is an element. You have to play some games. I don't think the league can afford, based on just schedule making, to take a whole month off.
Oh, wait, but aren't we going to switch the schedules? Because that makes a whole lot of sense.
Sorry. No, just for 1 year.
We're not allowed
just
to get
for
this
one year, like Qatar. Just for 1 year. Then you just switch it back. No ill effects.
Oh,
and
then
all
not
fine.
Play for 4 years?
Right.
Mm. Got it.
You got to find a way, and a lot of these games are at NFL stadiums. So you have an opportunity. How do you take advantage of that opportunity? Well, there's 8 years to figure that
there's
out.
There's not going to be any maybe a couple MLS stadiums that are involved in this?
BMO would be the only one,
yeah,
I think,
there's
right?
Not very many. Yeah, it's all
Toronto?
It's larger stadiums generally. So Soccer specific all the way. Say that five times fast. Doug Funny in Massachusetts. Massachusetts. With all the crazy all-star talk and international soccer going on, it got me thinking, what if the World Cup was contested by the best club players in a country, irrespective of nationality?
Ooh.
So we could send out this 3-5-2. Zach Steffen, Aiko Parra, Matt Beisler, Laurent Simon, Steven Betashore, Diego Chara, Tyler Adams, Diego Valeri, Julian Gressel, Joseph Martinez, and Miguel Almirón. Probably not going to win the World Cup, he says, but damn, that'd be a good team.
It's like a World Cup of league all-star teams.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Are you you're entertained by it? No?
No.
You checked out of that?
It'd still be largely the same team. Yeah. Too, well.
Okay. Didn't hit there. Fine. That's good.
I mean, the downside there was that England, well, they probably wouldn't have the best team. They probably have the second best team.
Nancy in
still
Texas.
Not too good.
So with Panama's poor showing against England, up crops the MLS is a crap league narrative because a handful of average MLS players are on the Panama side. Makes me wonder if you think an MLS best 23 would get other group of the World Cup. Let's not even entertain that. Let's talk about the narrative that was MLS equals Panama equals bad after a 6-1 loss.
Do we have to?
Do we really have to?
It's so dumb.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I think we just tackled it.
It's English journalists. I just hate this. Now.
Yeah, they. Yeah.
They're like parachuting in and dropping their facts over all of us.
Yeah, Ben's
just saying they're smarter than everybody else because they watch one game and have never watched a Hex game or anything like that.
I'm with you. Andrew from KC, from one Andrew to another, all these World Cup games have me thinking. I'm going to just delete that one right out because it's basically what we just said. Sorry, Andrew. Appreciate that. Like your name. Danny from Los Angeles starts his email. Actually, he titles his email, not to belabor the point, and then he belabors the point. He says okay, I'm advocating for a 48-team World Cup. I think that it will be entertaining. I don't think the quality will suffer in the same degree that everybody else says, and I think that the inclusion aspect of it will improve soccer for millions and billions of people, and I'm all for that.
You lose what we just had. What we just...
Why?
Because you don't play simultaneous group games, because with the 48-team World Cup, it's 16 groups of three,
Are you
I believe.
Willing to trade that for 16 more knockout round games?
Yeah. Yeah, like I love the World Cup format as it is. I think it's fantastic.
I do too.
I think it's the best tournament in the world.
I love it as well, but I don't think going to 48 is going to irrevocably damage it the way many others do.
Not irrevocably, but it's going to make it worse. It's definitely going to make
it worse. Walk me through your logic.
I think it makes the group games, I guess less cagey. Which is maybe a good thing.
That.
Everyone's gonna.
They're just
they
as important.
Have to come out and they're gonna have to try and come out and win.
You only have two opportunities. That's it.
Yeah.
Every single moment.
And like
counts.
I guess that's what bothers me the most is like what it's like. World Cup
get to the World Cup and you have three games to play, man. Like, that's a slice.
Sure, sure. But 32 teams will have three games to play. 16 teams won't. And so if you're saying, you know what, actually those 16 teams weren't good enough in the first place, well, they had their opportunity on the world stage, and I guarantee you some of them are going to pull an upset. It's not going to be chalk. It never is.
All right.
Something's going
to
happen.
You at least gave me something to think about.
Okay. All right. He says this is going to be the issue, that Panama's tactics against England were indicative of smaller nations in the World Cup, playing aggressively, calling for cards, and rolling around on the floor. He asked me if I actually want more of this in a three-team group. I do want more Panama. Did you watch anything else from Panama, or did you just zero in on those things? I mean, it's certainly on the field stuff's important.
I didn't think there was a lot of rolling around on the ground.
So. That's what the English journalists were saying, so the whole soccer world
He says, teams playing for draws and therefore penalties are going to make the group stages unbearable. I think we just talked through that. Don't think that's the case. 32 teams are perfect as it leads to a 16-team knockout competition. Again, made-up numbers. Doesn't really matter. You just like 16 because it's what we've had recently. If you really want to reformat the World Cup and make it more inclusive, then make the allocation of teams proportionate to the teams entering from each confederation with one guaranteed spot for each. Yes, the level of play will drop, but you wanted equality, not quality. No, I wanted quality, but I wanted opportunity. I didn't say equality. I said opportunity. And I think right now, Africa, Asia, and to a certain degree, CONCACAF are underrepresented on the world stage per the number of confederations comparable to England and, to a lesser degree, South America. Sorry, England, Europe.
I mean,
I don't have strong feelings either way on all this stuff, to be honest.
Yeah. Like I think the representation so far, as it is right now, is pretty good. I think it's pretty good.
I
would have liked if maybe one more CONCACAF team got in for this particular cycle.
Yeah.
But
Honduras?
Yeah.
they finished fourth.
Yeah. Big Cachachos guy.
Too bad. Too bad for them. That's it for us. You can let us know what you think. We'll be back on Thursday. Then plans right now, taking a break on Monday for the 4th of July. So keep that in mind. We will see you later this week. Have a good week, everybody.